Hello and a very warm welcome to Centre Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, anti-Iranian political and PAK journalism rhetoric have been going on for quite a long time. Now, having said that, it seems that Iranophobia and anti-Iranian fear-mongering have recently gained strength. Now, a very recent move of that sort is Hollywood's movie Argo. Now, in the past, there have been other Hollywood stereotypical anti-Iranian movies, but the timing of Argo, Hollywood's last attempt at Iranophobia, is particularly interesting. Welcome back. It's great to have you with us. Now, today we'll be getting insight from our top guest. Now, here in Tehran, in our Tehran studio, I'm very pleased to be joined by an eminent human rights campaigner. Mr. Masoud Shajara, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Pleasure is mine.
Thank you very much for coming. Now, let me just tell you that Masoud Shajara is the chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London. Now, Islamic Human Rights Commission is an independent, not-for-profit campaign research and advocacy organization based in London, UK. Now, we'll take a short break, but after the break, we'll be discussing this latest attempt at Iranophobia, the movie Argo. So please do stay with us.
Western media, particularly those of the United States, are constantly being inundated with irresponsible reports and stereotypical misrepresentations of all forms that are demonizing the Islamic Republic of Iran. They're all over the daily and nightly news and also in the newspapers, magazines, websites, and blogs, as well as all sorts of journalistic outlets. According to Amber Leon, outspoken investigative journalist and former CNN correspondent, through widespread and continual vilification of Iran, the U.S. media bombards Americans into approving a potential conflict with the Islamic Republic. She says, quote, "Several journalism experts that I've spoken to feel that we're being led into a potential conflict, this time, you know, instead of Iraq, it being Iran, and the public is being fed propaganda continually demonizing Iran." Over the recent years, Hollywood has most certainly played a very important part in fear-mongering and propaganda war on Iran, with Argo being the last attempt to stoke Iranophobia. Almost all coverage of Argo also noted that the film's Toronto Film Festival debut on September the 7th is the same day Canada closed its embassy this year in Tehran. According to Eric Wahlberg, Canadian journalist specializing in the Middle East, the first screening of the fantasy Canadian embassy intrigue last month must have been coordinated with the real-life Canadian embassy closing. It was masterfully scripted, worthy of an Oscar in itself. It is a sharp contrast to the scandal at the 2009 Toronto International Film Festival, which despite the Zionist regime's invasion of Gaza just months earlier, featured a city-to-city spotlight on Tel Aviv. The idea was to promote Tel Aviv as a city of peace, even after killing more than 1,000 Gazans in Operation Cast Lead a few short months earlier. As far as the movie's depiction of Iran and Iranians concerned, particularly in terms of its stereotypical approach, one suggestion may well do the trick. Come and pay a short visit to Iran, and you'll discover for yourself whether the movie's portrayal of Iran and its people have anything to do with the truth.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, some analysts believe Argo is a part of the undeclared war that Israel and the United States are waging against Iran. Masoud, what's your comments on that?
I mean, you need to demonize a group before you actually could unleash such unjust sort of behavior towards them, be it the sort of the sanctions or be it the sort of the issue of showing them as total demon, that these are actually people who are not part of same human race. And indeed, this has been portrayed in Hollywood, not just against Iranian. I mean, Iran has got, Iranians have got a special position on that, but against indeed Muslims as a whole. Really, if you look at the whole of the Hollywood and popular culture, you don't see any good guy Muslim in any of them. You definitely won't see any good Iranian. They're all bad Iranian. They're all terrorists. They're all you know, people of sort of negativity, rapists, you know, murderers, etc., etc. And that actually creates the environment in one's psyche that you know, these are not really the same part as the rest of us. They're not really human beings. And this process is not, unfortunately, a new process. This process was done at the time of World War II, you know, towards the Jewish community. And indeed, you know, those who were involved in that process in the Nuremberg were found guilty and, you know, they were hanged, including Julius Streicher, who was a cartoonist, which actually was portraying and demonizing the Jewish community and others, so will make it possible for genocide to take place.
What about a bit later, I mean, in the case of Afghanistan, or actually before the you know, the attack on the on Iraq in 2003, we know that the there was the case of the WMD weapons. And so do you think that probably what we have to look forward to, what we have to actually expect, is something more than sanctions?
No, I mean, really, this is a process. You know, you're talking about the historical aspect of it. You know, this is exactly what happened in former Yugoslavia. You know, the Muslims by the Serbs were presented as such a demon before the fact that, you know, ethnic cleansing, rape, and the ethnic cleansing took place. And indeed, when you look at the situation of when the crusade took place, I mean, this was exactly the same thing. And you know, and there is another aspect as well. You know, sometimes some observers say, well, you know, there is must be, there's no smoke without the fire. There must be something to do with Muslims, or indeed Iranians, and you know, Bosnians, or or whatever, that, you know, created this sort of environment. But this is not the truth. The history actually shows it was the need of the Nazis, is the needs of the Serbs, and it was needs of the Christian community at the time to actually create and strengthen an identity which was lost to them. And by, you know, using a demon a figure, you know, be it at the, you know, the time as Muslims in or in the same case of the Bosnia, the Bosnians, and in case of Nazis, the Jews and others, it was their needs to create a super culture of Germans, or indeed, you know, Serbs, or indeed, you know, the Christian community, which actually got involved in creating those havocs and so forth. And indeed, this is the we've seen in the Europe right now, the rise of the need to create and strengthen a sort of deluded identity, be it in France, or be it in Holland, or and this is why we're seeing the rise of extreme right-wing, super nationalistic fascism. And then that is part and parcel of that.
But, you know, Vassil, one point is that a number of analysts actually fear the worst. They because the sanctions have already been there, and then we had the you know, the movie Argo. So probably this is just something which actually will be followed by a war against Iran. And then there is the justification, okay, Iranians are bad, this is the typical, this is a typical Iranian who is associated with violence and lots of other negative qualities, and then you know, the
worst happens. I mean, United States did that against its own indigenous population, you know, against the Indians, you know, and destroyed them almost completely by demonizing them and making it possible to commit one of the first and most effective genocide of almost wiping out the whole of the population. You know, the issue is not going to start. The issue has already started. The sanctions are crippling and affecting ordinary innocent people. As a matter of fact, we know sanctions always affect the poorest of a section of the community, the most needed section of the community. Now, we were told that these sanctions against Iran is all for, you know, the government and the nuclear industry and et cetera, et cetera. But medicine is not getting through. You know, people are actually affected. They're, you know, dying or they're in ill health because of medicine. And if you remember what happened in Iraq, you know, when Madeleine Albright was interviewed and she was told that there were more than 500,000 Iraqi children have died as a result of sanctions. And is that justifiable to remove Saddam, which indeed they brought into power anyway? And she turned around and said, yes. I mean, what's different between this statement of terrorism to the statement of terrorism of those who actually drove the planes into the two towers? Because they also thought that their actions of killing hundreds of and thousands of people is justifiable. And this is indeed the first part of dehumanizing a section of community and indeed becoming the sort of in tune with the ideology of terrorism.
Right. Thank you very much indeed, Masud, for that. Now we'll take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other aspects concerning this latest anti-Iranian movie. So please just stay with us. Welcome back. It's great to have you with us. Now, Argo's Toronto Film Festival debut on September the 7th is the same day Canada closes embassy this year in Tehran. Now, to be more precise, Argo was actually premiered a few hours after the announcement that Canada was closing its embassy. Now, Masud, was this a mere coincidence or probably a pre-planned project, do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm sort of a person... First of all, I don't want to sort of give in to conspiracy theories, but at the same time, I don't think, you know, one could be so dismissive to say, you know, there are coincidences in this sort of thing.
Right.
But if you're asking me, is there a coordinated effort to demonize and actually have a policy to crush, you know, collectively the Iran and actually to bring a so-called the change of government, then I would say that yes, of course it is. You know, I mean, there are too many facts that points to that direction. We don't have to look at one incident. When you look at the whole incidents put together, you know, the relationship between the Canadian government and the Israeli sort of Zionist state, and indeed how even many Canadians are worked up about this, it actually highlights that there is a coordination going on. And you know, the sad part of it is that all this is not for benefit of neither the Iranians or the rest of the world. The ordinary people are going to suffer. The fact that we are going through one of the most dangerous and most grave economic sort of situation, and it's a time that we need to actually all the international community come together to address this. But we are, you know, moving away from that and looking for war, and which is going to actually create even greater sort of harm for the ordinary innocent people and indeed the most vulnerable in any society, not just in Iran, everywhere else. Right. It actually shows that really this is benefiting a very, very small group of people. So majority of people in Iran, Europe, United States and elsewhere are going to be among those who suffer.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about other Hollywood stereotypical anti-Iranian movies in the past. We know that this is not the first incident. We've had 300, we've had Not Without My Daughter, The Hitman, and also The Peacemakers. So what makes this latest attempt at Iranophobia, you know, stand out? How do you compare this one to its predecessors?
Well, this one goes far beyond, you know, a single issue. This actually sort of demonizes the whole system of Iran. I mean, you know, let us not forget the reality is that the revolution in Iran was one of the most popular revolution. And then, you know, right after that, there was a referendum that was overwhelming number of people actually came forward and they requested and wanted to have an Islamic state.
Right.
And indeed, even the last election in Iran, when you see, you know, the sort of the huge participation, despite the fact that all the enemies and all the oppositions were saying, asking people not to take part, but still there was much greater sort of participation of people. It actually shows shows that, you know, really people are supporting the system. Yes, of course, there are always some who are sort of not happy with the system that has been going on. But overall, there is a popular support still continuing for the state of Iran, and indeed the system within Iran. Now, this film is targeting that, actually is saying that, you know, that's not the case, you know, demonizing that. And indeed, you know, the fact that the United States lost so greatly out of the revolution in Iran, they actually want to glorify it, that they did it, you know. You know, if they made a loss through this film, they actually want to glorify themselves and by falsely statements, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Hollywood has been doing that for a very long time.
Right.
You know, and if you look at it, even I mentioned the issue of the Indians, you know, the cowboys and Indians was exactly the same thing. You know, here, you know, these founding fathers, they went down there, committed genocide, destroyed the whole, almost totally, the indigenous population, but the films were showing that it was Indians who were barbaric, not these guys who actually went, overtook their land and killed them and destroyed them.
One particular incident which was highlighted in actually the movie Argo was the occupation of the American embassy in Tehran. So they're referring to this as a particular incident which was not internationally acceptable. So how do you see that when you put it in context of
Yeah, but you know, I think, I mean, if you want to look at the Iranian-American sort of relationship, you know, it really is very stupid and very short-sighted to actually start from the sort of the siege of the embassy.
Right.
You actually have to go back and see how many times United States have been involved in committing coups, destroying the democracy, destroying the voice of people, empowerment of people in Iran. And you know, and when you look at all that, then you come to realization that, well, look, it was really justifiable, people's fear that here, once again, the embassy is going to be used to overthrow a legitimate system which was being requested by the overwhelming majority of people of Iran. Let us not deny that. That was a fact. That was a fact that, you know, overwhelming majority of Iranians wanted to do that. Overwhelming majority of Iranians were fed up with the Shah system and the support of the United States for it. Overwhelming majority of people were finding it totally unacceptable when they had a treaty with United States. I mean, they asked for Shah back and United States refused to do that, and Iran was always treated as a you know, second class citizen. I mean, I remember, you know, I'm old enough to remember that, you know, we had a situation that if some Iranian went and killed a dog in United States, would be prosecuted. But if American came and killed whole number of people in Iran, then legally it couldn't be prosecuted. And this was, you know, even colonial power didn't actually put that in law anywhere, which was existed in Iran. So, you know, really this sentiment of concern over the whole history of the way that the United States has treated Iran, you know, issue of Mossadegh, and, you know, even prior to that, it really, Iranians did have the very legitimate reason for being concerned with United States trying to, you know, use its, you know, secret service to change it. And when those documents were put together, actually showed that, you know, to what extent United States was involved in sort of dirty tricks in Iran.
Another particular detail, a very interesting detail in the movie, is that the role of the Canadian embassy in actually helping a number of Americans actually flee from Iran. And at the same time, we see that the Iranian the Canadian embassy in Tehran closes down. So probably there is a sort of connection or interconnection between these two. What happened actually in the movie? Basically the role of the role of Canada in that, and the closing of the embassy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the reality is that United States had sort of partners in their policy in Iran. United States has got partners in their policy in Iraq, United States has got partners for its policy in Afghanistan and you know, Vietnam, and you know, you go on and on and on. You know, the reality is that US, you know, as a superpower, it is demanding to have, you know, people who actually do its dirty sort of business. And you know, I'm not really surprised if that sort of thing goes on. It goes on still, you know. I mean, you will see how these drones are being used and how a partnership that not just Canadians or Americans or British or French, but we've seen some of the Muslim nations are actually participating and accommodating these acts of barbaric acts. Great. And I think we shouldn't be surprised.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take another short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other aspects of that movie. Particularly, we'll be talking about the timing of this movie. So please just stay with us. Welcome back. It's great to have you with us. Now we're talking about Argo, the anti-Iranian movie made by Hollywood. Now, according to some reviews, Argo makes the people of Iran look like they have no self-determination and indisputably support violence. Now, Masoud, how believable do you think these stereotypical qualities are of Iranians are for someone who knows about Iran and its people?
It's totally false. I mean, I think, you know, it's something that the history has very clearly identifies. Iran hasn't invaded any country, you know. Even at the time of revolution, all observers, all those who really in-depth studied the thing, they saw the way that the relationship, even between the masses and even the army, when there were people going and putting flowers in the gun barrels and hugging their sort of soldiers, and the soldiers taking their clothes off and joining the masses. I mean, you know, really the revolution in Iran was almost bloodless, you know. Yes, there was some violence. Yes, there were some hardcore, and the people actually stood up against that. But the reality is, if you compare it to anything else, Algeria, you know, any other revolution, you actually see how peaceful it was. And, you know, I think this is the part of the demonization. Really, this is why I'm comparing this film with the caricatures and the filmmakers of Nazis on demonizing and actually creating the environment where genocide could take place. And this, indeed, as I said, it was a crime which was addressed in Nuremberg by death penalty. So this is really what Hollywood has fallen to, is becoming almost like a propaganda machine of Nazis. And this sort of film really deserved with the same titles and same treatment.
And so it seems to be, I mean, the situation surrounding the movie and the timing, particularly the timing of the movie. We see the crippling economic sanctions, cyber viruses, and actually, you know, the war against Iranian media. So when we put all that in context, what do you think is the importance of timing here?
The important timing, I think, is sort of shows that there's a coordinated effort. Is not, you know, some observers say, oh, this is a tit for tat. It's not. It's actually coordinated, it's pre-planned. You know, it's nothing to do with the issue of nuclear industry. It really has nothing to do with anything except the fact that the West and United States in particular and Israel have decided that this is the time to put all pressure, as much as it could be, on Iran to crack, you know, a knot. But, you know, also we need to recognize Iran is not Iraq. Right. Iran has got huge support, and as I said, between the election. And indeed, you know, United States and all its allies still haven't been able to win the war in Afghanistan. In reality, they have lost it. You know, they are now begging to make some sort of deal with the Taliban so they could get out. They already decided they're going to get out, and Taliban is still there. And In Iraq, they've created a huge, one of the greatest catastrophe of our time. You know, they've caused the death of 1.5 million people, and the conflict still continues. And I don't know how when we will see the end of weekly and monthly deaths through bombs and terrorism in there. So really, the fact of the matter is that I'm extremely concerned. Concern because the international community is not rising up. Even United Nations, you know, and the UN Secretary, we just in the process of writing to him. Right. It is outrageous that after what sanctions did in Iraq and anywhere else, you know, United Nations is not standing up for the ordinary innocent people, for the most deprived section of any society, because sanctions affects them. Really, I mean, you know, I was asking doctors and some of the people in Tehran in the last few weeks, and I really realized that how much certain drugs are really not available because those were imported.
Right.
Majority of drugs is made in Iran, so Iran cannot become like Iraq. But nevertheless, this process could only lead to one place, and we need to rise up against this demonization, which could create an environment where Iranians will not be seen as a fellow human being, and therefore anything against them will be almost acceptable.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the media war, actually, which recently occurred against Iranian channels. I think there is one interesting point here, I mean, apart from what actually caused it, whether it's tit for tat or whatever you call it, but probably it shows that the message that the Iranian media was trying to send was important because it worries them, and they wanted to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, look, from the time of Gaza, it was a huge sort of setback for the Zionists and their supporters in the United States. And the fact of the matter was, it was very clearly, people were searching. I mean, there were a number of programs in United Kingdom, which was made about how people switch from all different channels into the Press TV, for example. Press TV became extremely popular because it was showing things that others were refusing to show. And that was the reason that people started sort of saying that, look, we have to sort of stop and silence that. You know, WikiLeaks actually sort of highlights that process and those conversations.
Right.
And you know, the reality is that this is, again, nothing to do with the nuclear technology. I mean, you know, for God's sake, you don't shut people out. You know, and unless you don't want to hear what they're saying, because what they're saying is actually effective, and what they're saying is exposing your lies and your cheating. And you know, and indeed, you know, West cannot really no longer go and say they've got a principle of freedom of speech.
Right.
You know, there is no principle of freedom of speech. It's only freedom of speech for those who actually say what we want them to say.
We know that you actually live in London, and probably you until recently had access to the Iranian English channels. So how do you assess the impact of the Iranian English channels on the you know, the way the public, the British public and the European public think about the current
situation? Actually, many people were watching it. I mean, you know, many members of parliament were watching it, you know, and some ex-ministers I know have discussion or watching it, and they were actually saying that really they find in certain facts that they wouldn't find it anywhere else. Press TV in particular has got a very, very sort of good loyal supporters that they actually even now going on internet and watching it. But what is no longer possible is for people, ordinary people, to switch through channels and get, you know, get introduced to something like Press TV. But I think in same time, technologies are changing. You know, satellite is no longer a necessity. You know, people, you know, now TVs are being brought to market that directly go to the internet, and actually you could watch TV channels through internet on your television screen. And many youth, you know, not people like my age, but my children, they actually watch all their news and all their input on their computers. They don't sit down watching television. They actually watch everything on their internet. So I think you know, really, these bans are not going to be as effective, but it's exposing the whole hypocrisy of the Western policies towards freedom of speech and et cetera, et cetera.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take another short break. We'll be back right after this. Hello again and welcome back. Now, probably Argos setting the stage for a war that some hope will follow. You've got to add to that anti-Iranian political and PAC journalism rhetoric, which sound ominously like spurious Iraqi WMD threats in the run-up to the 2003 war. So it seems to be quite dangerous, these moves.
It is dangerous, and one could say that this is done deliberately because it's first phase of other things to come. Or you could argue that this is a psychological sort of aspect. But whichever way you look at it, the reality is that you cannot demonize a group of people the way that these films and these processes are doing without some sort of impact on these communities. You know, once you demonize people, and the history has shown, as I mentioned, at the time of Nazis or the former Yugoslavia or the Crusade, this, could lead to death and destruction. And death and destruction, not just for one section of community, because, wars and death and destruction actually destroys everybody's life.
Right.
We are all paying for what United States and allies did in Iraq. We are all paying for what they did in Afghanistan, and we're all going to pay for other ventures like that. We need to have a peaceful, tranquil society for all of us to benefit from, and those who don't benefit from this, i.e. the Zionist state and so forth, the state of Israel cannot survive in peaceful, tranquil society. It will be totally destroyed because it actually thrives on fear, creating fear for its own population. Right. And that's the only way it's actually continuing its existence. So if there is a peace and tranquility, then people don't want to have these wars, they don't want to have these conflicts, and they want to live together. And so there is no more subject of Zionism. Zionism is totally destroyed. So I think the rest of us around the world need to recognize this, and we need to say enough is enough. Look, we want to create a society that we will have more dialogue and less wars.
Right.
We will have less weapons and more medicine and food, etc. We actually want to look at our planet and look after the whole planet. Don't have a racist, nationalistic sort of outlook to things. We actually want to change, and we benefit, all of us, from that perspective. United States is making living out of death and destruction, selling arms. 80% of the arms in the world are actually made by the United States and sold around, and they actually live on blood money. And we need to create a sort of a world that people are looking after the environment. People are spending time and money and effort to actually making sure everybody is fed and everybody is looked after, and creating a better and a just society. And I think we need to have a wake-up call among the masses against these politicians who are actually creating these scenarios.
Great. We know that Hollywood industry is one of the most powerful influential enterprises in the world, and we know that actually its message is heard around the globe. So how could we confront such moves by such a powerful enterprise?
Well, I think we need to expose it. I mean, there are a number of reports over this, and we at the IHRC have got a report on the media, and we expose how sort of Hollywood does this. And indeed, we need to look at the alternatives. There are a lot of alternatives. Media is coming out, especially at the time of internet. People are actually making documentaries, putting them out. People are making alternative films, putting them up. And there are alternatives information, media, and entertainment. And we need to encourage people. But I think also we need to go to the hardcore of the thing. These concept of actually creating others, you know, and demonizing them and saying these are not like us, these are others. You know, the sort of way that was done within the indigenous population of United States, and you know what happens to the Nazis days and what the Serbs did in former Yugoslavia and the Crusaders did. This needs to be moved away from the European culture, because really this is a European disease, and we need to make the Europeans and the, you know, include the Americans into that. That they need to actually understand that this disease, they need to free themselves from this disease, and they need to move away from it.
But the point is, you know, that just imagine you're an ordinary British citizen and you're or American citizen, and you're exposed to those sorts of you know, movies and you know, portrayal of Iranian people. So probably it's very difficult to have another opinion of the Iranians unless you make a trip to this country yourself.
Well, absolutely, but even they don't allow you to do that. I mean, there are all sorts of restrictions as put in people coming to Iran. I just heard today that if someone from United States comes to Iran, we're only allowed to have $200 with them, because otherwise this is, you know, sanctioned. Now, I actually think we need to change attitudes. If you want to change attitudes, you start on the schools. You actually start on people of 8, 9, 10, 15 years old, and you try to influence them. And the way to influence them is to say and to look at, you know, we're all talking about genocide and Holocaust and so forth. We need to look at the tools of genocide. One of the tools of genocide that actually creates the environment for genocide is this level of demonization. It will not be no genocide in the world without this demonization. This demonization process is actually absolute necessity for creating the environment for genocide to take place. So we need to educate people on that fact. And we need to sort of tell them that, look, you know, don't just wake up and see a genocide taking place. Just alarm bells should ring once you see these preconditions that actually could only lead to genocide, and then actually wake up to those.
When it comes to Iran, probably it's a bit difficult to demonize Iranians, isn't it? Because actually Iran, with such a long history and such valuable traditions, and I think everybody knows, even in Europe, in the US, about Iran, its history, its traditions. It's not a country which was created back 100 years ago. It's a country with a large history behind. So probably it's much more difficult for those who want to, you know, portray Iran like a country with no proper civilization or history, because...
But demonization has got nothing to do with the truth or reality. Hollywood has got nothing to do with the truth or reality. And you know, this is the horrible part of it. If you go on, and this is not just at the, now that we see mass media, CNN, Fox Television, you know, Rupert Murdoch and so forth.
We have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, right. Even if you look at previously, how the Crusaders demonized Muslims as people that do not believe in one God. They do this, they do that, they're, you know, they're not clean and so forth. The attributes were completely false, but they managed to promote them.
Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Now, unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment, and we have to end it there. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guest, Mr. Masood Shajara, Chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London. Now, until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Great to have you with us, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.